As we continue our study of the Sermon on the Mount, as Jesus continues instructing the people on how to live as followers of God, he now gets to the point where he addresses the practice of judging other people and pointing out someone else's mistakes or sin, as we call that. Now, just as that topic is very volatile and power-packed, well, this passage, Matthew 7, 1 through 5, is very power-packed as well. And to get to its true intent, it must be unpacked very carefully. So, tonight we are going to glean the theology of these passages, and we will do it by establishing three don't do this, do that statements that Jesus is propagating in this message. All right, here we go. Now, fellow West Virginians and Web Virginians, as you and I travel this earth as followers of Jesus, we will invariably have to notice shortcomings and missteps that other people make. We are going to see people going down destructive paths, and we are going to see people doing wrongly. We need to know what our responsibility is in these areas. Does God want us to point out a destructive relationship a fellow believer is in that we have judged as harmful? Does God want me to straighten out a mistaken piece of theology that someone is sharing that is, in my judgment, detrimental to themselves or to others? Well, Galatians 1:9 tells us this. Galatians says, if anyone is preaching something different to you, he should be judged guilty. Should be judged. John 7:24 says this. Judge by what is really right, not by the way things may look. Judge was the first statement there. Gang, you and I will come across situations in other people that need attention. And these verses that we just read show us that we will have to correct others. But Jesus, in this passage in Matthew 7, will address what we call the misguided correction. Correction surgery, the positive correction, is something for another day. Allow me to read to you Matthew 7, 1 through 5. You heard it in the King James before the drama. Let me read it to you from the Message. Matthew 7, starting in chapter 1. Don't pick on people. Don't jump on their failures. Don't criticize their faults. Unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, let me wash your face for you, when your own face is distorted by contempt? It is this whole traveling roadshow mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou part instead of just living your part. Wipe that ugly sneer off your own face, and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. All right, as we've said before, Galatians 1:9 and John 7:24 already told us that there are times that we need to judge something, and there are times that we need to address someone's mistakes. Put that right out there in the beginning. There are going to be times, and that's a subject for another day. But Jesus uses some very deliberate wording here in this. Jesus uses the word krino. The word krino we interpret in this passage as judging. What krino means, and this is on your outlines, is, I love the way the Message put it, jumping on one's failures, criticizing one's faults. That's not pointing things out, gang. So much so that the NAVS puts it as this. Krino is to judge someone to a place of hopeless guilt and condemnation. Jesus is saying here that we are never, We are never to assess or judge someone with the goal of doing away with them. No one is hopeless with God. We are instead to judge with the goal in mind of identifying mistakes, promoting restoration. That same book of Galatians 6:1 says this, "Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by or should fall into some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path." I have to read that to you one more time. Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by or should fall into some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path. So basically, the correct theology that we glean from these passages, along with Matthew chapter 7, is this. Don't condemn people when they sin. Instead, humbly help them. You can put that in on your outline. Don't condemn people when they sin. He's talking about believers here. Don't condemn them when they sin. Instead, humbly help them. Jesus knows we are prone to condemning people. I saw the results of this condemning so vividly. Back in the summer, we usually go into the Old Testament in the summer, and last summer I was teaching a passage about David's son Absalom. And I was with my friends who don't go to church. I have friends who don't go to church. And they were asking me, "Hey, what are you teaching on this week?" I said, "Oh, I'm doing the story of Absalom's death." I said, "Well, who's Absalom?" So Absalom, he was King David's son, and he was run amok, this guy. He was big trouble. He was a bad kid, right? He had lots of trouble. Stole his father's kingdom, wanted to kill his own father. And eventually, this Absalom got caught into a tree. And his father's general came up to him and saw him. And the father had said to the general, "Don't hurt my son." He says, and you know what he did? He took 3 javelins and jammed them right into Absalom and killed him. "Throw the javelin" was the name of that message. And I told the guys, that's what I'm speaking on this week. They were like, "Wow." I had a lot of people. Now they all started up. "I've had a lot of people throw javelins in me over my lifetime." "Really?" Then it was my turn to sit back and listen to them as they told stories about how they had been written off at different times, how people had stopped believing in them, how they were given one chance and that's it. And I realized what Jesus is saying here. Don't condemn people when they sin. Instead, humbly help them. Jesus is saying, don't condemn people who are getting it wrong. Don't condemn them. We'll talk more about how we do this later, but the do this, don't do that on this subject of pointing out someone else's sin is a gigantic don't condemn people when they sin, instead humbly help them. It's the first piece you want to glean from here, but there's more. Look at verse 2. Now, verse 2 in this passage says this. I want to read this to you from the American Standard. Now, the American Standard version is a very, very literal translation. Sometimes a little difficult to read, but it tries to give you the most proper word from the Greek over into the English. Here's what it says. "For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured unto you." Now, at first glance, you might assume that this means this. Well, how you judge others, that's how God's going to judge you. It sounds like that, doesn't it? But it doesn't mean that. God will not judge us by the way we judge. God will judge us by his perfection. God will judge us all the same. And God will judge us by the standards he has set forth. The most loose and liberal person on the planet will not be judged loosely and liberally by God. No. God's perfect standard will set in. Then what does Jesus mean here when he says, we will be judged by the way we judge? Who will judge us in the manner that we've been judging? The answer is other people. Other people will treat us how we treat them. Other people will judge us as critically as we are critical of them. If I am super critical of others, then they will be super critical of me, Jesus is saying. And if I am gracious, and if I am forgiving of others, they will be gracious and forgiving of me. Now, this past January, I guess it's not so recently, I was transferred over to A-Shift. A-Shift on the fire department, where I am Lieutenant Kleinbell to them. And I'm working with these new guys. A-Shift gets off at 7 o'clock in the morning, and B-Shift comes in. And we leave the firehouse and all the apparatus for B-Shift. And what's happening is a war is going on at the firehouse. My guys are at war with B-Shift. And B-Shift is relentless. These guys are good at this war. It seems every time we go in, oh, you left the fire engine with no fuel in it. I said, well, that's kind of a big deal. Oh, no. B-Shift will come in and say, guys, you guys left a mayonnaise container in the refrigerator with no mayonnaise in it. I said, oh, boy, here we go. Well, this has been going on. I have heard about how the men don't scrub the potty correctly. I have heard how they don't shovel snow the way they're supposed to. On and on and on and on. And guess what? My guys are picking up on it. And they're starting to throw it right back on B-Shift and nitpicking them. And the words of Jesus ring clear as a bell. The way you judge is how you will be judged. And I'm watching it playing out in front of these guys. Problem is, I hate picayune kind of stuff. I can't stand nonsense. And I can't believe my guys are getting caught up on it. But they are emphatic that if this is how we're being treated, that's how we're going to treat them. Once again, the words of Jesus are proven very true. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured unto you. So what do this, don't do that? Are we going to glean from this? Here's for your outline. Don't be merciless. Don't be merciless. Instead, what's our due? Be gracious and forgiving. I love gracious and forgiving people. I cannot stand merciless nitpickers. That is why Jeremy Cantalina fixes my computer. Because he is so understanding. You know how many computers I have blown up? I don't have enough fingers on my hands and toes to tell you how many computers I have blown up. Beautiful computers that Jeremy has made me that I don't know how to use them and they blow up. And every time I call him, he'll say to me, no problem. Bring it by. Drop it off. Emily will pick it up at women's group. He's the most gracious and forgiving computer repairman I know. And every time I think I've exhausted that limit with him when I call him up and say, hey, my computer just has some kind of cartoon dancing across it. Don't worry about it, Drew. We'll fix it. Instead, he could be the other way, merciless. What'd you do to it? Did you run over it? What did you do? Kind of like I'm used to hearing all those years. What did you boys do? Were you swinging on the doors in the house? Is that why they're rubbing? No, Dad, we didn't swing on no doors. Everybody needs grace. Everybody needs forgiveness. Mercilessness, out. Already, as we're looking through this passage, we're starting to see a common theme in these do this, not that theologies. And the theme for judging others, evaluating others, is a theme of love, wanting the best for someone at your own expense. It's a theme of compassion. It's a theme of gentleness and kindness. Gentleness and kindness get stepped on in our society. You're weak. You're goody-goody. Jesus says those are fruits of the Spirit. Jesus gives us one more piece of theology in judging and correcting. And I'd like you to look at verse 3 through 5, and here's what it reads. Jesus says, why do you notice the little piece of dust in your friend's eye, but you don't notice the big piece of wood in your own eye? How can you say to your friend, let me take that piece of dust out of your eye? Look at yourself. you still have a big piece of wood in your own eye. You hypocrite! First, take the wood out of your own eye. Then you will see clearly to take the dust out of your friend's eye. This passage, I find it fascinating for what it does not say. It's what it does not say that blows me away. Jesus does not say this. Jesus does not say, how can you notice the speck of dust in your friend's eye when you have a speck of dust in your eye? He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, how can you notice your friend's vice when you have a vice? He doesn't say that either. Instead, what Jesus does say is, oh, you notice your friend when he cusses, when he hits his finger with a hammer, but you ignore the fact that you cuss like a truck driver all day long. Jesus says these folks that he's talking about here, the incorrect correctors, these folks raise an eyebrow over someone's church deduction on their tax forms, but they don't pay taxes themselves. Jesus says the people who notice a tiny splinter in someone else's life have a gigantic log sticking out of theirs. Friends, we call these people church police. Church police. And the problem with church police is that they have cast their gaze outward towards others, but turned a blind eye on themselves. You see, church police have a ton of inner issues that they need to be working on. That's the log in their eye, Jesus says. Not just a speck of dust. But for some unbeknownst reason, they decide that their duty is to point out the tiny splinter, the speck of dust in someone else's eye. Now, don't get me wrong. I could get amped up here and I can go on a tear all night long about church police that I have come across, and you can join in with church police you have dealt with, and we could talk about that all night, but that's not why God put this passage in the Bible. He didn't put it in here so you and I could go spot church police and rip them. He put it in here so you and I wouldn't be church police. So that we don't pick up that characteristic that we hate so much coming at us. Don't you become a church cop. You'll get furloughed. If you want to police anything, police your own heart. That in itself, gang, will keep you busy for quite some time. So our last piece of theology in our do this, don't do that is this. Don't cast your critical gaze outward, but do cast it inward. One of my favorite stories is from back in the 1800s with William Gladstone. William Gladstone was the head of the English Treasury, as that's kind of how we would know it, the English Treasury. He was in charge of all the money in England. And it came time for him to present his budget to the Parliament. This is a very big deal. It's well publicized. It's a major thing. And so Gladstone was getting ready for it, and he sent one of his statisticians over to retrieve some crucial figures that he had to have on the money that was available and money that was in England. And this guy was a good statistician. He was a good accountant, and he came back, but he made a mistake. He tripped up. He made a mistake. And he gave Gladstone numbers that were really low. England had this, but Gladstone's statistician told him that England had this. And Gladstone, he was just getting ready for his big presentation to the Parliament. He grabbed the numbers, he presented them, he put together his presentation, he ran with those numbers, and everybody would be watching. He went to Parliament and gave his speech. The numbers were recorded, it was all put in the press, and it did not take long for people to realize there was money missing. We got a problem. And the person they looked to as the culprit was Mr. Gladstone. And this guy went through some major stuff. He was criticized, threatened to throw in jail. People were at his house. His family was under tremendous oppression from other people. And this was really bad. And Gladstone struggled for weeks to correct it. And finally, he got the lid back on that jar and corrected things and said, "Whew, a mistake was made. These are the proper numbers. Everything's cool." And then Gladstone went back to his office and called for his statistician after it was all over. And the man came in. Gladstone said he looked like he had been sleeping on the street for a year. He was so haggard from the mistake he had made. And Gladstone looked right at him and said, "How are you?" The man didn't answer. And Gladstone says, "Well, sit down. The mistake that was made was mine, not yours. You own none of this." He says, "I am the liable party. I should have checked it. I should have noticed it. You are an excellent statistician, and I will keep you for as long as I work here." How easy it would have been for Gladstone to address the speck of dust in the statistician's eye. But instead, Gladstone addressed the log in his own eye, which was his arrogance and which was his negligence. Jesus wants you and me to be like Gladstone. Flawed, yes. Quick to admit it. He wants us to be people who don't condemn others who are getting it wrong. Instead, humbly and gently help them back to the right path. He wants us not to be merciless and nitpicky, but to be gracious and forgiving. He wants us not to cast a critical gaze at other people, but Jesus says, cast your critical gaze within. Westbridge, you and I are to don't do this, but do this. I'm going to ask the band to come back. I'm going to ask them to take us through Mighty to Save one more time. I want you to pay close attention to the very first words, the first verse of that song. Because you know what? God can make the changes we need. God is mighty to save. God is mighty to change. And a lot of us need to be able to go back over the road we've traveled and say, you know what? I have been neglecting looking inside, and I've been turning my gaze at others. I've been quick to point out where other people wrong me, but I'm not too quick to own when I wrong somebody. And Jesus is saying, if you're going to follow me, you've got to get this principle right. Because later will come all the correcting and all the evaluation that we will be doing as church leaders. But you can't get there until you've mastered being here. Let's sing together.